Time to check in with some baseball talk this morning. Right. Here on AM 930 WEOL. I'm Bruce Van Dyke.
I'm Craig Adams.
And joining us on the line is Yankees historian, worked PR for the Yankees many years, written a lot of great books about the Yankees, Pinstripe Empire, the New York Yankees from before the Babe and after the Boss, also the one about Thurman Munson, Munson, the life and death of a Yankee captain. But Marty Appel joins us this morning. Good morning, Marty.
Good morning, guys. Good to be on with you.
So I'm looking at your book, and there is, as what I thought it was, a wrinkly wink. That's the that's the sort of expression I think of when I think of Casey Stengel. And this is the book you've written, Casey Stengel, Baseball's Greatest Character. Was there ever a young Casey Stengel? This is, as from a person of my age, that's how I remember him. But obviously, he had to grow up. Tell us a little bit about the fresh-faced Casey, if there was such a thing.
That's a good observation on your part. There aren't too many people around anymore who remember a young Casey Stengel who broke into baseball in 1910. But I'm kind of laughing at what you said, because Mickey Mantle was 19 when he joined the Yankees, and they played an exhibition game in Ebbets Field in Brooklyn before the season started. And Casey had played the outfield for the Dodgers, and he went out to show Mickey how the balls rebounded off the metal fence out there. And Mickey looked at him like, "You old man, how could you know this?" And Casey said, "You think I was born at age 50 and went right into managing?" So it was a funny little first meeting almost between Mickey and Casey. And the title of the book, Baseball's Greatest Character, which I think the photograph captures, MLB Network once did a thing on superlatives, the best home run hitter, the best relief pitcher, and they did one on Baseball's Greatest Character, and it came out to be Casey Stengel, ahead of Yogi and Babe Ruth and Satchel Paige and Jackie Robinson. And so once that was announced, I thought, this would be a good subject for a book. It's been over 30 years since anyone's done one.
Was he always a character, or so did he become one?
I think he always was a character. I was able to find an interview he did once where he talked about his childhood and what he and his brother would do for recreation. And one of the things they would do would be throw snowballs at men with pipes to try and knock the pipes out of their faces. And I thought, yeah, this is our guy.
He played for all the New York teams, the Giants, Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Mets. Why did that happen?
Well, he didn't play for the Yankees and the Mets. He managed them, and he played for the Dodgers and the Giants. So nobody else has worn the uniform of all four teams. And he wound up spending 30 years of his career in New York City. So although he spent his winters in Glendale, California, where he lived from 1924 until he died in the 70s, New York was really where he made his impact, where he made his mark.
Managing the Mets was a different animal versus managing the Yankees. How would you describe those two eras?
With the Yankees, he was a genius. He had great players. He won every year. He won 5 straight World Series, 7 in all, 10 pennants in 12 years. And he put his whole reputation at risk by going to the awful startup expansion New York Mets in 1962. Now, with the Yankees, he was fully engaged. He remembered every matchup, who pitched against who in April and who got a hit. And the things that are shot out with computers today, he had all in his mind. He was a baseball genius. when he went to the Mets, he was a different kind of manager. He knew he was there for entertainment purposes, to draw fans, to divert attention away from the bad ball playing. And so he kind of let his coaches manage the games, and his center fielder, Richie Ashburn, who was a veteran, he kind of let him run things on the field. So he really made a big conversion there in those 2 years. But you'd have to say it worked for the Mets. He really put them on the map right in year one.
Talking this morning with Marty Appel, the book is called Casey Stengel, Baseball's Greatest Character. What was his home life like, or his off-the-field life like?
You know, he had no hobbies. Baseball was his life. He didn't play golf. He didn't swim. He didn't play cards. He hardly watched television. He had no children. He and Edna married in their 30s, and in those days it was thought to be late in life to have children. So she traveled with him almost the whole baseball season every year, and they lived in hotel suites most of the year, and they had a wonderful life together. She was like the first lady of the Yankees and the Mets all those years they were together there.
Sometimes now we hear about a given manager being called a player's manager. How would you describe Casey Stengel?
Well, Casey wanted a win and did whatever was necessary and didn't care if he hurt a player's feelings in the process. When Billy Martin, who was considered like his pet, was traded from the Yankees in 1957, Billy didn't talk to Casey for like 25 years because he just thought Casey didn't stand up for him. They were supposed to be joined at the hip. And Casey used to tell people, well, tell Billy Martin to grow up. This is the profession he chose. People get traded every day. Tell him to stop whining about it. So people thought there was an affection there, but to Casey it was all business. Still, they reconciled at the end, and when Casey died in 1975, Billy was the only Yankee that went to the funeral in Southern California and slept in Casey's bed that night.
What would he have thought about the Yankees of the Joe Torre era and the way the team has, had rebounded since sort of a slower period?
There was a lot of comparison, I thought, between Joe Torre and Casey Stengel. When Casey got hired by the Yankees in 1949, purists were outraged. The talk was, how could the Yankees, the proud and mighty Yankees, hire this clown, this guy who once let a sparrow fly out from under his cap? This is so un-Yankee-like. And he proceeded to win 5 straight world championships in his first 5 years. Now, when the Yankees hired Joe Torre in 1996, Torre, like Casey, had been a longtime National League manager without much success, mostly second division finishes. And the headline on the New York Daily News was Clueless Joe, which really meant Joe doesn't know what he's getting himself into. But the comparison was very much similar, and Torre wound up winning 4 World Series in his first 5 years as manager. So it was a remarkable parallel there.
Casey had some stars, of course, on those teams, Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, I believe. What was his relationship with those players?
People were anxious to test him or to see how he would get along with Joe DiMaggio when he arrived. DiMaggio was the elite figure in the game. Casey, of course, as we said, has this clownish reputation. And Casey did something interesting the very first day of spring training. He read off a set of rules for the players for spring training, and tucked into the rules was they couldn't go to the dog track at night in St. Petersburg. Well, anybody who followed the Yankees knew this is what Joe did every night. So, my gosh, what a line in the sand to be drawn on the first day. And what do you suppose happened? DiMaggio went to the track anyway, and Casey said, when asked about it, Casey said, well, I don't have no firsthand knowledge of that. I wasn't there. And that was the end of the controversy. Today there'd be 2,500 cell phone photos of Joe at the track, and they'd run in the newspapers, and the headline would be, "What now, Casey?" But in those days, that wasn't the case.
Speaking of controversy, what cap is he wearing on the cover here of your book? That seems to be one that people are talking about.
That got a little bit of controversy to it. It's a Mets cap, but the photo is cropped so that it doesn't show any particular team, partly for the reason that the book is about all the teams he played for. Didn't want to just make people think this is about his Mets years. So the New York Post actually picked that up on their gossip page over the weekend, Capgate, as though somebody was trying to hide the Mets cap, yeah. But that wasn't the case.
Slow weekend in news, perhaps, but then again, any kind of talk is good to get a book out there to let people to...
Sure.
And who are you hoping reads a book like this? I mean, you're talking about a guy who died over 40 years ago. What do young baseball players, or I should say fans, can get out of this, and what do you hope for something like a book like this?
He was such a colorful character from another time. Now, young fans today, to be honest with you, as I was doing the book, I met very few fans under 40 who had even heard his name. It just doesn't come up during broadcasts or anything like that, and let alone his accomplishments, but very few had even heard of him. So I understand that, because when I was a kid, I had to catch up with 50 years of baseball history. It was doable. But today's baseball fans, if they're just starting out, they've got over 100 years to catch up with. They've got almost 1,000 players a year come on the scene. In my day, when I was a kid, there were 400 players each year. So I understand the difficulty of it, but I would encourage younger readers to discover this guy. The book is representative of baseball from 1910 to 1965, John McGraw to Tug McGraw, and it was Casey embodied the soul of American baseball worship in his life.
Where did he get the name Casey? Was that just from Charles, or was that just... I know baseball players are infamous, you know, if you don't have your name, a nickname gets put on you in baseball.
Well, Casey was from Kansas City. And so in his rookie year with Brooklyn, presumably somebody just said, "Hey, where are you from, Rook?" And he might have answered, "Casey." And a nickname was born.
Yeah. Well, as it goes for baseball, Casey's not a bad nickname to get as a baseball player, that's for sure.
Well, you're letting me say that, coincidentally, my first grandchild was born last week, and his name is Casey.
Well, there you go. We appreciate that story. It's great. Again, Marty Appel, before I let you go, what was it like to be working for George Steinbrenner at such a young age? Did you feel like Sean Spicer at all, where you had to kind of answer for a big guy? I mean...
I can relate. I was the first PR director of the Yankees hired by George Steinbrenner. I had him in his 40s. He was this aggressive businessman from a town called Cleveland, Ohio. And every day you'd wake up and you wouldn't know what the day would bring, but you knew you'd be on the back page of the tabloids the next morning.
Well, yeah, always had a sharp pencil ready to go, I'm sure, for that.
Absolutely.
That morning. Well, Marty, we appreciate your time. And again, people can pick up the book, Casey Stengel, Baseball's Greatest Character. Thanks for the interview. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.